Welcome to Pleb Chain Radio, a live show brought to you by Plebs for Plebs, which focuses on the intersection of Nostr and Bitcoin protocols. Join QW and Avi as they run down the weekly news and developments, breaking down the current thing and the future frontier with the foundation of decentralization, the builders, thinkers, doers, and plebs. All right, we are live.
Welcome, gentle plebs, to episode number 85 of Plebchain Radio. Today is the 1st of November, 2024. It's a Friday. I cannot believe it's November already, but it is what it is. It is 12:57 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States at the time of recording. We have a really special show for you today. Our guest is one of the few people who's worked both with Jose Mourinho and Pep Guardiola. It's Rob Brinded, author of Mind Decentralized, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation. And just a reminder, if you are listening to this show on Apple or Spotify podcasts, first of all, thank you for listening, but I would urge you to hit pause and switch over to the Fountain podcasting app, where you can earn some sats and support the value for value revolution in the process. Our show is recorded live on Nostrness and broadcast live to zap.stream. And on Nostrness especially, there is a live chat feature that goes along with this, with the conversation, and that can get pretty lively. And for our meme readout today, QW, I am doing a variation of a meme that I did a few months back, but I think it's topical.
So, same template, you mean?
So, yeah, same template and very similar words with a small twist, which I think it's relevant to our episode today. So it is a three-frame meme. It has, each frame has an NPC on the left and a Chad on the right. In the top frame, the Chad is looking at the NPC and saying, "You triggered me," while the NPC glares back, looking very annoyed. The second frame has the Chad moving closer to the NPC, and you can see the NPC's expression change a little bit, wondering what's about to happen. And the third frame, the Chad is right next to the NPC, and he's whispering in his ear, "I'll work on myself so you won't trigger me next time." And the NPC's expression collapses. And with that, QW, we now move on to our culture corner. And you've been paying close attention to Nostr culture and Bitcoin culture, presumably. What have you seen?
Well, I like to keep it. We are a very current show. And we are community based. So it's very important to highlight things. I can't believe it's already November 1st. Happy Halloween, Avi. I don't know what you were last night, but I'm sure it was just magical. You trick or treating by yourself out there. But Nostr November is upon us. Last year we did that whole Nostr November movement, kind of just sparking, get off your ass, do a local meetup, just anything. Meet a local Nostrich at a bar. Do anything to start that wheel. So here we are. Nostr November's back, and I cannot believe it. Avi, last November we were doing Nostrville 1.0. We did our show. I mean, it's been a whole year now, right?
Oh yeah, I remember that show. That was a good live show we did.
Yeah. Rockstar and Odell hat tip. But I just, man, a year blows by, but I mean, I don't know, maybe I was pushing my toddler around at that show, and he's a little bigger now, but, I can't believe it. So Nostrville 2.0, I believe it's just going to be a party at Bitcoin Park. And then they're doing an after party. I think Sleepy's throwing an after party. Do you know the date on that, Avi?
I don't, KW. I've been out of the loop on that. Well, I'm not going. I'm not going.
Yeah, me either. It's a lot just for a one-day deal. But then November 7th, Nostr's birthday. So I think we're turning four or five, but really only about two in regards to actual adoption and just full on building. So happy birthday, Noster, in 6 days. So kudos to Fiat Joff for architecting our beautiful open protocol, and we appreciate you. But that's it for Culture Corner for this week.
Love it, QW. And for our sermon today, it's Does Bitcoin Fix You? And what I mean by that question, QW, is clearly we've had multiple guests on our show, and we've seen how Bitcoin has freed them from the fiat rat race, from the 9-to-5 hamster wheel, a little precursor to what's about to come. But how Bitcoin's been able to free them from that 9-to-5. But does that really translate to happily ever after? I mean, you see a lot of Bitcoiners changing their diets. They become more family focused, you know, once they've discovered Bitcoin, and they start thinking generationally, right? They lower that time preference. But I still think there's work to be done, right? Because a lot of people are carrying baggage from childhood, from maybe it's from their parents, maybe from being bullied in school, all sorts of environmental conditions, and that translate into existing behaviors and thought patterns. And unless they're willing to put in the work, confront themselves, confront those issues, right, and resolve them, fixing the money with Bitcoin is just icing on the cake, right? When the cake itself is crumbly and rotten. So you got to fix that as well, right? Bitcoin doesn't magically fix every single problem in your life. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, Bitcoin reveals. I think it's just an ultimate truth. It's something where, you know, it's going to just reveal. So our world is typically a mirror. I tell my wife that a lot. You know, if you're in a bad mood, you're looking at the world bad. That kind of perception. But Bitcoin can strengthen the perception in revealing your true self. If you start from a truth and you start to realize, okay, a lot of this stuff is a lie. Everything I'm learning or what I've gone through, the fiat mindset, the legacy mindset, social media, all these things just become lies. And all that is revealing itself through truth, whether it's Bitcoin or Noster, you know, and we become, and the big thing, I think, after you kind of work on yourself or understand that there's issues, is becoming a steward of the pleb ethos, you know, in a very much a vessel. If we want adoption, you know, community is a big part of it. If you're just inward and you don't have people to talk to, you don't have like-minded people that see the same world, you know, break away from I'm just a freak thinking all these things by myself. That was a big thing that I went through when, you know, Bitcoin Twitter, then Noster came around, and I was like, okay, there's actually people out there that see the world the same way that I'm kind of perceiving it. So that's kind of that community empowerment deal is a big one. And, you know, if we want adoption, you know, in Bitcoin fixing things, obviously it starts inward. You know, you start to understand, you know, it's not about the number go up, you know, it's about truth, revelation, and it starts within. I mean, you know, Avi, I met you through my revelation. I met many plebs, many in the community, all from Bitcoin fixing my perception, I would say. So how do we make Bitcoin, you know, Bitcoin fixes this. How do we actually expand that to Bitcoin fixes everything? It's just pleb by pleb, right?
It's pleb by pleb putting in the proof of work.
Yeah, and proof, and that's what. So, what are some of the big things? I'm just going to ask you off the top. When you thought about Bitcoin fixes you, what was kind of the, like for me, time theft, the way that proof of work in the fiat, the difference between proof of work and fiat. You know, the time theft, it was a big one. I think that hit home with me as far as, you know, having the abundance over time. What are some of the things that you can reflect on that really kind of worked for you?
Well, there's certainly those that you mentioned, QW, and a lot of the standard ones that you'd hear a lot of Bitcoiners talk about, right? Lowering time preference, where you don't prioritize instant gratification, mm-hmm. rather think long term. But I will say a key one for me is the way I got to Bitcoin was I got wrecked with blockchaining and shitcoining, right? And
that was high time preference stuff.
That was high time preference, but I had to confront myself at that point, admit to myself that I was completely wrong. And the people that I was dismissing, the Bitcoin maximalists back in the day, were actually right. Right. So I had to basically eat humble pie. And that humility, that having to go through that process, allowed me to apply that sort of cycle to other areas of my life. Right. Where else have I been wrong? Questioning things. And addressing prior assumptions. So it's been a very helpful tool. But that said, I had to do the work, right? Bitcoin didn't magically do it. It just opened the door for me or held up the mirror so that I could look at myself and say, okay, here's what I could do.
Look at yourself. My God. low time preference is big. Because if you look at what's going on in society or social media or everything, it's the biggest app right now is TikTok. It's just a dopamine flip through the next thing. Big thing I have with my group of friends is a lot of sports betting just on the game of the night, parlays. That kind of stuff is just, it's just feeding this high time preference enigma. And it's something I think low time preference is almost like a fishing on a lake type of thing where no one's around you. Just a very peaceful harmony that you kind of achieve when you start studying mm-hmm. Bitcoin, and it's a breath of fresh air. So
Bitcoin, you're saying, QW, is like teaching a man to fish,
rather
than giving it to him.
And it's got a hole in the boat, so there's going to be a boating accident, just a matter of time.
Well, that yes, indeed. With that said, QW, I think we have our guest is much better equipped to answer a lot of these questions than the two of us, who are really glorified shit posters on Nostr.
He's got laser eyes, Avi. His InPub, his profile has laser eyes. So watch out.
All right. Rob Brinded, welcome to PlebChain Radio.
Thanks so much, Avi. Hey, QW.
Hey, hey.
I'm not sure I have, I'm a better equipped, but I've spent just a lot of time down this rabbit hole. So. I'm excited to be on here.
So, Rob, we've got to start with a burning question before we get into all that other stuff, which is who was easier to work with, Mourinho or Guardiola?
Okay, so I would say Pep Guardiola was easy to work with because I didn't actually work with him. I was three seasons with Barcelona, but I was working with a player. So there were other players who at some points reached out to me, but I had to stay with the one player. So I wasn't in the change room, although I have, my player told me about it. So Pep Guardiola was easy to work with because I didn't, but Mourinho was incredible. So I can talk more about Mourinho. I've worked with other managers. Rijkaard was there at Barcelona for the first season, and then Pep came in and took over, cleaned out the players, that were maybe a little bit past it or partying too much, but he already had an incredible team there. And then that season we won everything, six trophies, so everything there was to win. So I was kind of fortunate. But go ahead if you want me to tell you a little bit more about Mourinho.
So we'll let's rewind a little bit, Rob, and we'll get to that. So how did you begin this journey in sports coaching? Would you say, or yeah, what was the beginning like?
Yeah, so I was I tried to in the 90s. I did triathlon in France, and it was more ego driven, but I was trying to be a professional triathlete. I wasn't good enough at the end of the day. So I returned back to the UK and did a sports science degree. While I was there, there was a football club there, Chester, which used to be a big big club, but when I was there, it got relegated. And it was, I went along and I said, look, this is, I do strength and conditioning. Are you interested? And they brought me in. I was paid at the time like £400, which was great because it helped me with my uni. And I worked there. I learnt a lot about politics in football, how not to do things, etc. From there, I went up to Liverpool and helped out at the academy. I did that for free. So while doing my degree, I would travel up by train and work for free because I needed the experience, because no one would risk anyone who's not known or has no experience with a sports player. So from Liverpool, I went to South Africa, worked for the largest academy there, came back, and then I kind of stepped on the professional ladder, getting paid good salary. I worked under Jean Tigana. I was assistant fitness coach. And from there, reached out to Chelsea and got my foot in the door as more of the medical team. I was rehabilitation. I was brought in there, and then I started to get very much interested in finding out why players were getting injured in the first place. So I created an injury prevention gym, and that grew. And and I was there until I realized that my work was moving more towards understanding that players were more susceptible to injuries when they were stressed. And when you look at stress, it's coming from perception. And faulty thinking and, you know, emotional energy going into the body, creating instability. So I went more and more down the route of what I thought, you know, was the most important thing for preventing injuries, which was the non-physical. But that didn't tie in with the ethos of a sort of centralized medical authority. And in the end, I resigned and then a little bit of work in Middlesbrough. I was working in the International Ballet at the time, also with ballerinas. And I got the gig at Barcelona, which was awesome. So that's kind of how I got into sport. It was bit by bit, and then all of a sudden.
When did you realize that there was a mental or emotional component to injury?
Initially, all of my work started on myself, and then I would try it out on the players. So from what I was learning, going deeper into myself and into, let's say, more of a spiritual, trying to understand, you know, why I was in so much pain, both mentally and physically. And there was a particular, in the book, Decentralized Mind, there was a particular moment where I was doing a very advanced posturology assessment on the players at preseason, and one of the players came in best in the world in his position at the time, and I got him to stand on two weights, like a weighing machines on each foot. And there was a lot of other stuff, but focusing in on that weight shift, what I wanted to do was understand where was he placing his weight. So if it was much more on one leg, that's probably going to increase risk of injury. So I had all the medical team around me, and he stood on the two weights, and he was 8 kilos heavier on one leg. And the medical team around me said, oh my God, podiatrist said, oh, short leg. The chiropractor said, oh, it's probably his atlas, you know, vertebrae in his neck. And everyone saw, you know, what they see based on their prior knowledge. And I was about to continue with the assessment, and inside of me, there was this voice that said, come on, come out of the closet with the emotional stuff. And so I stepped forward and I said, what's the best sex of your life to the player? Because I wanted to access like a positive thought. And he thought about it for a very long time. I had my eyes on the scales, and he balanced out perfectly. When he thought about the Romanian girl, I think it was, he balanced out zero, perfect balance. And I it was like, for me in my profession, I could never have done that. It was jaw. I was just mouth open. I looked at the medical team. Their eyes were sort of crossing over because it went too far away from their sort of framework for reality. But it was zero out. So then I said, what's the worst moment of your life? And pretty much instantly, I saw his eyes flicker going through the folders of his internal computer. He hit on the folder with the worst moment, and he went to 9 kilos heavier on one leg. And I turned to the doctor and I said, did you see that? And his eye, cognitive dissonance. His brain couldn't get around it. And I walked home that night. I think it was that moment where I said, okay, I'm probably going to have to resign because the medical team are just not ready to see where I'm going with this. But I walked home thinking there's one thought, the positive thought strengthened his energy. So it put his central nervous system, his sort of internal physical intelligence computer system to a stronger, more balanced position. And the negative thought completely destabilized that. And so it reinforced my understanding that non-physical has a massive impact on the physical. But I was touching on exactly how it happened. Now, many 20 years later, I know that that is via the mitochondrial system or the meridian system that the Chinese worked out thousands of years ago, that our thoughts impact our physical body via the sort of electrical system, and your thoughts, have a direct impact on the physical. So at that point, I went down mega rabbit hole, and I still work sort of in that realm now.
And you went straight to Barcelona after that?
I resigned. And I went to work with Robert Huth up at Middlesbrough. He was having problems with his ankle. And I was
born. Huth, I remember that.
Yeah. I worked with him a lot. He's a good friend. He came to my wedding. Messaging him today. So I stayed close friends with a few footballers who were very genuine. But it's an industry where you don't really make friends because you're competing against everyone, and everyone, people move and move on. So in a way, it's an amazing industry, but it's also very fickle and political. Yeah.
I'm kind of blown away on, and it got me thinking, because the mentality and injuries, when I'm obviously from the States, I think about Brett Favre. He played 297 games in a row.
Yeah.
But the legend, Cal Ripken Jr., he played 2,632 games in a row on baseball. And I just think, are these guys just mental giants? I mean, could that possibly be what maybe helped them? Just their mentality, starting from there, is the foundation. I mean, we don't have answers to that, but it is something that it's a possibility, and it's something that, until you said that, I didn't think twice about it. It's unheard of today.
Yeah. I would say there are answers. That's where I work, that looking at someone's operating system level, mental or mindset, you'll find that people on the, we can talk about hamster wheels at some point, but the way the mind works is in duality. So if you imagine drawing a circle, you can imagine a hamster in it, or yourself, or whoever's listening. On the right is more yang, it's doing, able, right, supportive of self, there's five main hamster wheel operating systems that run. On the left is unable, wrong, more worthless, yin, feminine energy, non-doing. So the mind works with in duality, and there are five main programs that run our thinking. When you work with elite athletes, the ones it will show up in their makeup if they're more likely to get injured. Injuries give a player an out. So just yesterday, I was talking to someone. He smashed his, he's broken his leg, and immediately sort of checked what's going on with his life. And he doesn't know what I'm doing, but he broke up from his wife. And the left side of the body is feminine. Legs is to do with sort of support or lack of support. Anger will break your bones. It comes down to, you know, you can kind of work out exactly if why is someone broken their leg. It's because he's on the right. So he likes to be right. He likes to be able. He's driven to achieve. When he gets into a situation when he's unable, he hates it. The type of person who doesn't like to be unable, he will try and force the ableness. And because the hamster wheel nature of the mind, he will pull in an unable experience, which was the broken leg. I've seen this over the decades that it's you can kind of almost with, you can look into the future and see what's kind of inevitable from someone, from their mindsets. Coming back to your point, some of the players I've worked with who get injured the least are the best at suppressing their emotions and shutting down, but that leads to other problems. So they're able to play, with no physical pain, but it will find them somewhere else. It's like an ability to use false tools to deal with emotions. The ones that can't do that get injured a lot. So there are players, I won't say their names because it feels a little bit disrespectful, but there were players that were injured all the time. And Jose came into the dressing room one time and said, right in front of me, he said to this player, you're weak mentally. And everyone was deadly silent because Jose was face like of thunder. He said, you're weak. And the player kind of whimpered, no, I've got a grade three, whatever. And he goes, you're weak. You're a weak mentor, you're a weak man. And he walked out. Everyone was like shocked. That player changed after that. What Mourinho was doing was manipulating him or getting him to try and change because he was fragile mentally. So I agree with your point, KW. They are monsters of mindset. There are people who will fight in a UFC thing and they'll break bones and they'll continue. And there are others who are more likely to be on the left of the hamster wheel. They will quit quicker. And it's up to, these hamster wheels control us. They're like the deep operating system. And if we want, they act as a centralized authority and they control us. They're like the Pied Piper and we dance to them. But as Avi was saying, can we do more to free ourselves? Or is there more than just Bitcoin? Yeah, this is where we're getting into freeing ourselves from the only real central authority, which is the mind.
And you've captured these concepts. You said the only real central authority, the mind. And of course, you've written a book called Mind Decentralized, or I guess I've also seen it called Decentralized Mind.
Yeah.
Right.
I forget what I call it.
And so you introduced the concept of hamster wheels in that book, correct?
Yes. To be fair, I was coming at it more of as a Bitcoin book, like, that the mind works more as a centralized authority and we need to, the real is the detachment based on, there's nothing new here, but very few people go through and experience it and free themselves. So you have, Jay Krishnamurti, one of my teachers, Buddhists for a long time talked about the mind is not you and you have to detach yourself from the sort of the stories. So I think I'm writing a book at the moment, which I'm just pretty much finished going through the review. There I'm talking and going deep into the hamster wheels. And the hamster wheels came about because the other work I was doing didn't change me, like didn't change my identity and my insecurities and stuff. So that's where I started to go deep into trying to understand my mind, and through observing my mind every day for hours, which is meditation, understanding the self, I was able to see this pattern of behavior that worked exactly like a hamster wheel. And I was like, holy shit, this is a hamster wheel. Why is no one talking about this? And the more I've looked at it, the more I've seen that this fundamentally creates your reality, because there's no separation between what we have outside of us and what's inside, you know, our perception. And so if we want to change anything in our reality, and that's where I work with my clients, if they have a problem, then we need to look at what is the operating system that's glitchy, coming back to your point, Avi, about, you know, the traumas and limitations that we all carry. They create the hamster wheels. And so we have to, as QW said, it's an undoing. It's an understanding of what's not true. And when we understand what's not true, it instantly frees us when we find the truth.
You know, Rob, you and I have chatted about hamster wheels separately, but for folks who are completely new to the concept, right? It's the idea is it's like there's a hamster wheel, right, with a hamster running in it, hamster being you or your mind.
Yes.
And then there's an emotion or a state of being on the top right. And there's one in the bottom left, right? The opposite sides.
Yes.
The hamster is trying to run towards and reach the top right.
Yeah, being valuable. Sort of being loved or getting the needs met, which top right corner is love, connection, and belonging. Those are the unmet needs. And that's what the hamster is trying to reach up on the right. But because those unmet needs didn't happen in childhood, then the next best thing is being valuable. And on the opposite side of valuable is worthless, which is, you know, a Bitcoiner will either be on the jammed up on the right or on the left, but the nature of a hamster wheel is it's jammed up. So there's no way off it, if that makes sense.
So are we all trapped in hamster wheels?
Yeah.
One of these five?
Yeah. They play different times, but if I was to give an example, maybe, you know, for myself. So, you know, I mentioned before I was trying to be a triathlete. So I spent, you know, years forcing, like trying and fantasizing about achieving a professional sports person where I would be valuable, because I'm jammed up on the, I was more jammed up on the left, and through this work, I'm much more balanced now. But on the left, I felt worthless as a child. So I became very much driven to achieve, as everyone does. But my setup is I revert to the left, which is more of a victim and unable. So being a triathlete, I tried running up to achieve, but I would always either self-sabotage, flip over, or just get exhausted and roll back in, you know, like exhaustion. Then I went to Chelsea. It was just the same hamster wheel. I was trying to be valuable, work with the most valuable players in the world. I had my initials on my uniform. I was on TV. I was, you know, flying around private jets, but I still felt worthless. So that hamster wheel of trying to be able is one of the hamster wheels. And I just constantly felt unable. When I finally stopped running and saw the hamster wheel, I started to look at my unableness, look at what I was running away from, and look at what I was scared of, which was fundamentally being able, because I could never reach it. And through that understanding, I was able to see this very simple, like a four-year-old defense mechanism of a hamster wheel. It's there to keep us safe, but it was keeping me safe in unableness. And then through observation, which is the only way to escape, you can try drugs, you'll come back and you'll feel unable. You can commit suicide, which is devastating for everyone else. Or the only way is to decentralize or to observe. And through that non-doing of understanding, you will open up the other side of the hamster wheel. And that is, so I would say with the hamster wheel work, it's just a framework to make it easier to understand this internal environment. And it's a de-engineering. We have to de-engineer this faulty coding and sort of undo it. And then through undoing, we free ourselves.
So there's the able and unable hamster wheel, right? So let's talk about that one first. Do you have, obviously without naming any names, right? But do you have any examples, any real life examples of someone who was stuck in this hamster wheel and what they did to, I guess, not to escape it, right, Rob? What you're saying is observe it and make peace with it, right? Or understand it. That's the state that, that's the aspirational state, right, for anyone.
Yeah. What's kind of like a positive outcome from, you know, how does this play out? Well, it's proof of work. So you have, like, all my clients, if you're not willing to take full responsibility for your keys, so to speak, it's a lonely road. You don't do it with anyone else, and it's an internal job. So when I'm working with people, they have to be taking full responsibility for everything in their life is an internal job. However much you want to point your finger at the government or this or that, anytime someone makes you angry, it's an internal job or whatever. So I had I can give you many examples, but here's one for you. I had two clients, one very, very well-known actor and one athlete, very, very well, very highly decorated athlete. They came to me, so they're both jammed up on the right. They're extreme high achievers. They hate to be unable. They both attract cancer. For me, I know that sounds, maybe people will be going, what the fuck? They attract cancer. Well, what does cancer do? Well, it gives you unableness. And when I was talking to the very, very well-known actor, it took a little bit of time because he was defensive. But when he realized that, it was like a jaw-dropping moment when seeing the hamster wheels and showing exactly, deducing exactly how his life is, knowing things from the hamster wheel about his life that he hadn't told me. Through that, seeing the results, he realized he had to work on the unableness that he was running away from to resolve the cancer. So he went in and did the very painful work because the cancer was very painful. So there was a real it was a good leverage. Yeah. And so he did the work. The athlete who came to me was a real fighter and very defensive. And I knew it within the first few minutes that this was going to be a tall ask for me to show them what the truth was. And so this lady said, I'm going to fight this. And I said, no, you're going up on the right. You're trying to be able to achieve and to win. And you're going back into your programming. The cancer's there to show you that there's this other side of reality, which is unableness, and you don't like it, but the wheel always balances. The Taoists got this thousands of years ago. The yin and the yang is just like you push a ball underwater. At some point, it's going to pop up on the other side. It's just the nature of reality. So I said, you're getting unableness. And she said, no, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm going to fight this. And she unfortunately passed away. So it's just when you start seeing that everything's interrelated and connected, then you can start to see exactly why you pull in an experience. It's very liberating, very freeing. I've got another one that I was speaking to today, and he was a Bitcoiner. And he brought up, it was clear that right or wrong hamster wheel was playing. So he was trying to be right everywhere, but always felt wrong, that he was doing something wrong. So when you're jammed up on the left, you want to be right, but deep down you feel there's something wrong with you. So he asked me, Rob, I'm a bit obsessed with checking the Bitcoin price. So I said, why do you do it? Why do you check the Bitcoin price all the time? And he says, I don't know, I'm just obsessed. Then we went deeper, and it turns out that when he looks at it and it goes up, he feels like he's doing the right thing. So he's looking for certainty. He wants to be the genius and show everyone he's right. But the interesting thing is, if the price goes down, he feels wrong. And Bitcoin has that way, right? But also when the price goes up, he then starts to worry about what everyone will think about him and doing the wrong thing and not being able to help his family, which is the right thing. So the song, let's say, or the program of right wrong is completely clouding his whole reality, and he needs to see that to understand why he takes the price. So if everyone who's listening, if you take the Bitcoin price the whole time, you want to ask literally, why am I doing this? Because it doesn't really mean anything. So I know it's an all-time high soon, but in dollar, you know, one Bitcoin. But if you're feeling like out of control with looking at it, yet, as KW said, you're getting a dopamine hit. The dopamine hit comes from feeling like you're right. And that's the critical thing for a child who created the program is, especially in the UK, kids are told, oh, bad boy, you should be doing the right thing. This is the wrong, right or wrong is conditioning deeply through school, through collective. And so it's very freeing if you can, once you see the programs and see that they're controlling you, then you can free yourself.
Avi, I'm a genius. I've taken my price indicators. I've taken my little buzzes on my phone when it goes up, down, what it left, right. I've completely removed myself from the price of Bitcoin.
Yeah, but I'd remind you.
Yeah, but I can't escape it because I have friends. I was just thinking, because we're talking about left and right, and you know, the left side, I feel like that's been society's kind of strengthened that over the last 10, 20 years when they start passing everybody in class that's, you know, they're normalizing just kind of subpar, when they give everyone medals and in sports, when we think about kind of, they're just, you're okay to be not okay type of mentality, you know, where, you know, you're a rather large obese person and that's healthy these days, you know, as long as, you know, you're happy, all these things that, and then it also ties in kind of to our TikTok, our dopamine hits, our, you know, we're okay. You know, we're having fun and we're just kind of escaping from reality. I feel like we've shifted that hamster wheel over just our society in general. Kind of putting that right side further and further away, or you have to break away just to kind of know that that's there and you should be striving to achieve that. Does that make sense?
100%. It's a great question. Like I'd love to talk about this. You know, I could talk about this all night, this particular thing, both the equality, right? It's like trying to make everyone feel able. Is still coming from the mind. So it's politicians who usually right driven or you know, the activists who went, you know, they're always trying to revolutionize something. It's kind of their incentive to get paid. They're trying to make everyone feel able and stop unableness, but that creates more unableness. Like everything that comes through the mind creates the opposite. So you try and make more equality, you create more inequality. You have the IMF who's trying to, what do they call it? Cure, you know, fix poverty. And they seem to be very good at creating it, right? It's the mind. That is the fundamental flaw. Anything that comes because you want to create more ableness, you're going to create more unableness. I know it's a bit random, but this story always pops up. There was a lake in Papua New Guinea. The people didn't have much fish and stuff, so they said, oh, we'll make them more able themselves and we'll add piranhas into their lake, but vegetarian ones, to make them more able to be self-sufficient. So what happened was that the piranhas changed and they became carnivores, and so they ate everything. And now if the locals go into the water to wash, they are attacked, and this guy had his testicles ripped off. So that they call it like the devil has come to the lake. And it's the scientists thinking with their minds and trying to control an extremely complex system, and the mind is limited and always creates the opposite. So what you're saying is absolutely right. We're moving more towards trying to make everyone feel able, but again, it's still the same hamster wheel. And what we need is free market. So free market comes when there's no mind saying you should do this, you should do that. And it allows the nature, the DAO, to find the solution. So a complex system finds the right answer based on truth.
I'm picturing a drugged hamster just docile on the wheel, not even.
You can do that. There's a lot of people that do that.
Just not even left or right. Just
I see what you mean.
Completely NPC. Yeah. But there's a lot of people that do that. Yeah.
I would say non-player, so NPC, right, is someone who's not striving or mm-hmm. who's not on a, you know, there's some thought that if you have a compulsion to achieve and then you think, okay, I'm going to remove that, you won't achieve. No, that's not how it works. You then become balanced and much more efficient. And that's called flow state. So if you have no mind, mm-hmm. so you're balanced, then you score a goal or you don't, it's equal, then you are more likely to score a goal. There's no thought. When the thought comes in, it ruins you. So you could have someone become a billionaire and achieve, but I've worked with billionaires who then talk to me and say, "Rob, I feel completely worthless. I stick coke up my nose all day." And they're talking worthless. I don't care about all the stuff that I have. So the mind is a trap. It's our prison. The mind then goes, "Hey, don't get rid of this, because then you'll be nobody. You won't have any drive." That's not how it works. If you walk through this, you'll see that everything starts becoming more efficient. So since I've kind of dissolved my able, unable to, you know, I'm sure it's there deep down somewhere, but it's not like it was before. I've been much more able. I've done, you know, I'm on my finishing my second book. My work's exploded through working on becoming a nobody. There's the the Taoist principles of non-doing, effortless non-doing.
Yeah, I feel like that flow state is me turning price off, keeping my DCA on, and finding that Bitcoin Zen of not caring about anything that I just focusing on myself, and that's my Bitcoin Zen. So I might be that player that doesn't care if it goes up or down.
And that's how Bitcoin helps us, right?
And that low time preference, ensure that certainty that the math is on our side.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah. And it's freeing. And it's you see it. And I was talking with Alex, a Bitcoiner here on the island, and he was going into how if we get onto a Bitcoin standard, the money goes up over time and we'll be free to, you know, maybe we'll have robots or something, but we'll be free to do what we enjoy. And that will be a moment where, because we're not so stressed and running to achieve all the time, then we'll be able to understand our own programming, spend the time and be quiet, which is necessary to understand the mind. And Bitcoin is, it's not, but I think it's necessary for us to have a revolution of the mind through self-observation, through meditation. We have to change our societies, you know, the monetary system and the crazy pace that, as you said, the hamster wheel that we're running.
Where do some of these hamster wheels come from?
From my observation, and through working with a lot of clients and them agreeing, because when I work with someone, they have to agree with what I'm saying. So I say, "Can you see that? Yes, in my life, yes." What I found was I was working on the hamster wheel concept, and I was thinking, where does this come from? I was asking the same question, and I was waiting for the answer, and it took weeks. And then I drew a circle, a small circle, to the bottom left of the big circle. And I just left it on the board one day. And the client said, "What's that little circle?" I said, "I don't know. It's just like, I need to draw it." And then I watched a quick video of Gabor Mate saying that the disconnect that happens in childhood because the parents are too busy. We have a society now that detaches the parent-child connection very early in the hospital and then through daycare to schooling. And because our minds are distracted and speeding up, it's harder to stay fully connected physiologically with the child. That creates a disconnect. That's the initial trauma that then the child doesn't get the needs met. So that the unmet needs creates the hamster wheels to try and get the needs met, but it's only focused on, it's a closed loop. That's where they come from. QW was, I think you're kind of saying that we've got a bit of a nanny state and we're giving excuses to people. When I say trauma, there's no excuse there. I'm not one of these people who's saying, they're walking around going, I'm traumatized from childhood. No, we all have, I call it a disconnect, but you can call it trauma from childhood, where we weren't emotionally able to understand why our father was always busy, or we took it as though we weren't valuable to them. And so we exaggerate as child that, where it's very painful. I'm not saying exaggerate, it's very painful and traumatic. And then that creates these programs. So when I work with a client and I say trauma, it's not that they have to go back and understand it and work it out. It's to understand that when you disconnect, as we did from the America disconnect from the gold standard, what were the symptoms from that? Well, what happened in 1971, the website shows you what has changed from that disconnect. And I'd say it's something similar with humans. And so what we can do is sort of reverse engineer and go, okay, I know why, you know, I understand why this kid created this program, but come on now, it's time that I stop being run by these, you know, I need to find the truth of what's actually going on in my perception and my beliefs. But everyone's run by these. I'm still looking for someone. I am, and all my clients, and I'm talking like very well-known clients who run by this. If you want to see a hamster wheel, look at Sylvester Stallone. If I worked with him, he would fit perfectly. He said, I kind of spent all my life trying to gain the love of my audience by being valuable to them. And then to realize that I was unable to be there for the most valuable people in my life, which were my children. David Beckham's documentary, you'll see the hamster wheel in action. He can't stop achieving. Nothing's ever good enough, which is why he constantly cleans, and his OCD. OCD ties to this. All addictions tied to this. It really explains human behavior. You know, bring it back to Bitcoin. I can never quite understand how powerful Bitcoin is. I appreciate the nature of it, but for me, it's like this yin energy, non-doing that is sucking everyone in to, you know, and the hamster wheels are disintegrating when it comes close to, you know, understanding that Bitcoin discovery.
So what happens when a person is able to dissolve all of their hamster wheels? I don't know if dissolve is the right word. Do you know anyone who's done that? And how can we live that life?
No, I don't. It's a lifelong pursuit. There's no destination. So what you find is when you're looking for the truth, you start to understand things better and you become more free and you are much more peaceful and connected to, I'm much more connected to my children, my wife. Everything improves. When something triggers a hamster wheel, I look at it. Is it possible to never have a mind, you know, to be perfectly balanced? I don't know. I'm not definitely not there yet. I haven't met anyone who is. I know, you know, Krishnamurti, you know, I know things about him that he also had his hamster wheels. So the one thing, Gabor Mate, wonderful education, a teacher in the field of addiction and understanding human behavior and trauma. He was being interviewed recently on a podcast, and it always blows me away when he does this. he was talking about a time that he was triggered by his wife, and she didn't pick him up on time for the airport, and he felt abandoned. So he said it triggered the little child's abandonment that I had. And he said, the interviewer said, how long ago was this? And he said, oh, just a couple of days. And he's in his 80s, and he's been doing it his whole life. But the freedom to be able to understand where something comes from creates heaven on earth. And so it's a one and a zero. It's the red pill. You either take it or you stay in the matrix, and you run the hamster wheels and you suffer. So it's please.
That sounds easy enough, Rob. You just observe yourself as a witness. And you label, not label, but no, it's not easy at all, right? But the problem is we're so caught up in our lives that it's just impossible to step away and say, oh, I'm doing this, right? This is I'm in this hamster wheel, I'm in that one. But if you can do that, I think that's the move, right?
It's the one and the zero, it's the only way. I was talking with an athlete the other day, and I was explaining the greatest revolution in sports, sort of advancing sports, and Americans were ahead of the game on this, was video recording. So to be able to watch your opponent and devise to see where his weaknesses are and to devise strategies to take advantage of that. And the athlete said, and I was just about to say, and also videotape yourself to see what you're doing, because it's very difficult to watch what you're doing when, say, he was a fighter. Am I dropping my, hand away from my chin when in this particular position, or in jiu-jitsu, it's very difficult to know what you're doing when you're fighting someone. And so observing yourself is the most simple thing. It's like huddling, but we know it's not. It's actually the mind. We're so conditioned to dance to the tune that the thoughts make. The mind is an internal operating system that was programmed before 4 years old, and it runs on loop. Just these five programs are running the whole time. So first step is to realize that you're not your mind. So you have to watch your mind and see that it's just on autopilot. And then you get a little bit more clarity, just like if you're looking in a lake. At first glance, you see the surface. The more you look at the water, you see further and further down into the depths, until if you watch for a long time, you can see objects on the floor, right? So the same with the mind. When you start to see, oh, there are five different programs, which is what I did, and I teach this, and then my students go, oh, yeah, it's obvious. And then you start to see them playing. It is absolutely liberating, and it also takes a lot of stress off the body, because we haven't gone into how the emotions that spin out from those hamster wheels block starts to slow down the energy moving in our body, which creates illness and disease.
I'm thinking about a lot of the examples are obviously sports or kind of that mindset, high testosterone kind of abilities. I also think about like the society in general kind of maybe having lower testosterone over time. How much does testosterone go into play with this wheel? From the male side.
Yeah, no, 100%. Oh no, from the women's side as well. If your partner is on the right, she's going to have more testosterone than you. I'm kind of joking, but she'll wear the trousers. She's the doer. And you have lots of relationships where the men are on the left and more yin, especially since a lot of children being brought up single family by the mother, right? And we've been conditioned that men are somehow toxic to be masculine, but women are also masculine and feminine. In fact, they're actually more masculine these days because it's been conditioned into them. Not that that's bad or anything. Men are more feminine or more masculine. It's just it's relative and it can change. Testosterone is down in the dumps, right? Why? Because men have been conditioned that being masculine is wrong. The men on the right side, so if I'm working with a man or a woman on the right side of the hamster wheel, they're extremely driven, they have high testosterone. If I'm working, let's say, with a man on the left, he will have low testosterone because his safe programming position is defensive in unableness, to it is, he is safer in being wrong, There's no testosterone there. That's not, so the mind will switch on or switch off the testosterone. So it's 100% great question. And it, so that perception of your reality, if so, you know, the athletes who win a football match and they test their testosterone, they go much higher, and the athletes who lose, they drop. And so we're constantly experiencing win or loss, and that, and also different organs. So I know clients on the right have strong kidneys because I've tested that for years. On the left, they're more prone to, you know, mononucleosis or exhaustion or low immune system. People on the right have very strong digestion, stomachs. They can stomach anything. People on the left, they have food allergies. Everything makes them unable. You know, it's just, if we need a medical revolution, because when they realize that emotions affect our body, that they're screwed. Like, there's no pill for that. You know?
Yeah. And so you also work with CEOs, or just, you know, I mean, really, I'm sure anybody that's looking for guidance or help. How do you approach, let's say, a CEO versus the striker at Barcelona?
A super great question again. How I would, if I'm thinking about it right now, the striker would be extremely high performance. So I would approach things like, let's look to see what is possibly there that's weakening you or limiting you. And so they're immediately dialed in because they want the 1%. I'll be talking like, let's look for the 1% advantage, which it is. It's more than 1%, but that's the type of language. With a CEO, usually, unless he's an extremely well-balanced CEO, would be usually quite, you know, used to calling the shots. I sometimes go in very hard on them. If I feel that they're trying to control the conversation, I'll go in hard and hit them. I'll position it where they realize, oh, okay, I'm not in control. And then I love working with just normal people. And then sometimes you have to, someone come in and they're very spiritual. They're the red flags, you know, the ideological ones. You'll find that a lot of shit coiners are spiritual and they have man buns and wolf t-shirts. And so they're the more ideologies you have, and that's equality, you know, DEI and all the add-on beliefs, they're the ones that I have to be sometimes very, you know, put my finger on a point and not let them squirm. But I don't normally have to do that. CEOs are usually awesome. They're trying to improve. If someone's defensive, I'll be, you know, gentle, work my way in. Some people just blow snot bubbles and cry. And again, it's people are in pain, and I'm there to just try and facilitate the uncovering of the truth of why they're suffering, and so they can be free. And it's just an awesome job.
Just off topic here, Avi, my son, I haven't cut his hair. He's almost two. He's got a man bun, and his whole week he's had snot running down his face. He's been blowing snot bubbles, crying with his man bun. So that hit home there, Rob.
But kids could do kids could do man buns. But
I need to get him on more carnivore. Get him that.
In jiu-jitsu, which I do, if you have a man bun, you know you're not supposed to, but that would be like straight away you can control someone by their hair. But that's kind of a bit extreme. However, someone wants to have their hair. But there is a certain pattern in behavior, and it comes down to someone's behavior. They want to show it through the way they're dressing. And, you know, you kind of know the way someone dresses if they're going to have, you know, certain flags on their, you know, maybe Ukrainian flag on their profile on Twitter. And so the patterns are there, and human behavior is very, when you look at it, it's basic. People are very, very, can be easily understood by this hamster wheel. So if you want to get a hack or an inside cheat code on human behavior, it's there, it's within you. you know, you can find it for yourself. If you want to do it with me, you know, that's, I make it quicker. But at the end of the day, you got to do it yourself.
So, Rob, you've mentioned Bitcoin quite a few times. How does a guy who's into sports coaching and then moves more into this mind-body healing modality, if you will, right? How did a guy like that find Bitcoin and become a Bitcoiner?
So the way I work is when I realize that I'm doing something wrong, I want to try and find the right thing to do, right? Right, wrong hamster wheel. I go up on the right. And I started to read. I realized that I didn't understand money. This was like 2015, and I didn't understand money. And so I started reading like Anthony Robbins books, like any book in the, you know, the top 10 of Amazon I was reading to try and understand what is it about worth, value that I didn't, and money, what didn't I understand? And I knew that if I just put my energy into that and just kept reading, I'd find the answer. And so you got Anthony Robbins saying you need this much in money in the stocks, and that it gives you 10% a year, and then you can retire if you've got 500,000, if you go live in Thailand. And I was reading it, I was like, this isn't for me. And I knew if I put my energy in to finding the answer for me, I would find it. And then one day I was at a high net worth event in Thailand, actually, in Koh Samui. And I'm also good at understanding that I'm not the brightest. So I listen to smart people, very intelligent, not the ones that talk all the time, who try and make out they're intelligent. Like, I have people I can access. And there was this one guy, and I talked to him about things. I said, what are you into? And he said, I'm all in on this thing. And it was Bitcoin. And he said to me one thing, he said, Rob, you can only hold it to the level you understand it. And that makes a whole lot of sense to my whole work of, you know, if you think about my mind work, that fit. So I could only understand it, and I could only put the work in if I thought I was worth it. Like, is, you know, if you've got to put your energy, make sure you understand how valuable it is, and then understanding Bitcoin and the value. And so I went full. He said that night I started going full, and I spent the next, you know, however many hours a day studying Bitcoin, paying someone to explain what blockchain is, you know, how the blocks are done. I didn't really understand it, but I knew if I kept putting my energy into understanding it, I would get it at some point. And so the more I studied it, the more it I could see it merging with my work. So there's this thing, and it does everything without doing anything, and it changes people, and you know, it's just this protocol of truth and ones and zeros. And I'm like, this is my work. So nothing ever happens by coincidence. Everything, if I put my time and energy into something truthfully, then I'm going to find the right answer. And so I just went and then I went full, you know, maxi. I did this bit of shit coining 2017, understood that there was no, it was not truthful. There was no proof of work. It wasn't tied to anything in the real world. And then we'd had a child, me and my wife Sylvia, and then she green pilled me on unschooling, and it took a while. But then, you know, you go Bitcoin, you go the red pill, which is my work, and then green pill is understanding that, you know, the centralized authority and that disconnect and the controlling nature of school, where you have to obey the authority, conditions us. And I wanted my child not to step into the hamster wheel, or both my children. So now my wife has she's very close to starting a place to be in Madeira. We've very good news today. And so there's the green pill, there's the orange pill. And as KW said, you know, the more you look for the truth and you see how the world is run, the more you uncover the truth. And so, you know, all my family are teachers, and I was very reticent to go forward with not sending them to school. But now I know Bitcoin is the way, I know unschooling is the way, and I know you know, the red pill of understanding self and detaching from that centralized control of the mind is the way. So it's just, those are the three pills that I'm into at the moment.
Yeah, talk a little bit about A Place to Be.
Yeah, my wife, similar to my experience with Bitcoin, she went deep into trying to understand what was right for my first daughter, Lima. And she became more and more convinced, as I became more and more convinced about Bitcoin, that unschooling was the way, to the point where we've moved around a lot as nomads. And we realized that for children, that constant moving, you're constantly looking for a community to connect. And how we used to raise children in a community is the parents are all together, the kids are all together all the time. Maybe the fathers go away and hunt, but the mothers are always there, the children play, and they learned everything by being around adults. So we started to think about how could we come up with a community here in Madeira where we have a neighborhood where the kids are all together. They are allowed to follow what they enjoy. So it's self-determined what they learn. So that's unschooling. There's no curriculum. And somewhere where the parents could be and connect and the children be around, but then they can go away and run in the countryside, you know, animals, plant food, you know, and get rid of the screens. So those were the kind of main ideas, and we found founders, and now we're very much moving to starting this through, you know, getting the right investors on board. Huge piece of land, 500,000 meters squared here on Madeira. So the kids will have plenty of place to run. The only rules will be, it'll be, you know, free libertarian. So the parents, you know, you can't tell kids, other parents' kids, what to do. But the ethos will be allow children to be, treat them seriously, boundaries. Don't, just because you're an adult doesn't mean you can tell a child, you know, what the child should or what wants to do, you know, and of course, unless they're in danger or they're doing something illegal. So there's nothing illegal. And the thing that's been the most contentious area is the screens with the children. Because we've seen that we had one child come and we're all playing together. We have a lovely community here now. And this child bought his phone and was on it. And then the other kids came around in the park and they just sat there locked in. No eye movement, just, the zombie face. And we realized that that is an addictive device. So there won't be any screens outside. So if a child wants to watch a screen, they can go to their home. So we're going to have 25 houses on this land, and we'll have a farm, and we'll have a Brazilian jiu-jitsu tatami and cold plunge and, you know, animals, and the kids can live how they used to live. And the last thing I would say is, counterintuitively, just like Bitcoin, just like the mind work, is when you allow a child to follow what they enjoy, they will learn, and they will learn more efficiently and quickly. And I didn't believe it until I saw it. So my kids don't learn. They only learn about what is necessary for them. And so they're constantly learning. In fact, you can't stop a child from learning unless maybe you send them to school and bore the shit out of them and sit them down in a chair and tell them what to do. That will create optimum environment for not learning.
Yeah, and for sure, Rob. And I'm sure you've gone through the schooling system as have I during our childhoods, and it's hard to remember much from what was taught, what was yelled at from those classrooms.
I made the analogy to my wife that sending your kid through the public school system these days is like a Tyson chicken factory. As far as how it goes in and comes out type of thing. But that was just my funny way of explaining it. And I did watch that Max DeMarco documentary. And I think you were in it. I thought that was a nice wide net that was cast. And obviously Pablo was in there too. Pablo Fernandez, another person that travels a lot, definitely is teaching his kids the way of unschooling. I just think it's a very interesting watch, and I'll put that in the show notes too. But congratulations on the big news or the big steps towards your ultimate goal.
Yeah, thank you. It's for us with Madeira, you know, we love Madeira. It's a beautiful island, and the Madeirans are lovely. We wanted to create something on the Bitcoin network, so to speak. And so we thought, you know, there's a lot of Bitcoiners who want to travel somewhere and they don't have the community. So it was our way of sort of giving back and a place to be. It started off with the bee, not a Bitcoin bee. But the more my wife sort of spoke and interviewed with people who wanted to join and they weren't Bitcoiners, she started to tell me like, oh, it's kind of a bit of a red flag. And I'm like, yeah, that's because they're a shitcoiner. it was remarkable. It's like she was casting the net to everyone, and she's not going to stop someone because they own Ethereum or anything like that. I'm just joking. Mm-hmm. But we want a place where like-minded individuals, and you know that if you're a Bitcoiner and you meet someone who's you know, sort of on the fiat side, it's very difficult to talk about anything because you lose them, you know, in explanations. So it's become like there's the bee in Bitcoin. I'm wearing a t-shirt now. The bee is a Bitcoin bee, in a place to be for the children.
Well, and if they go to Madeira, you know, you don't necessarily have to preach Bitcoin. I think it's one of those places. I think it's 120 plus now businesses that accept Bitcoin. It's on the, you know, it's a sticker on the front window. It's one of those things where people start to ask questions about Bitcoin versus you telling them or cornering them. And Bitcoin being truth, they're going to find that truth in the end, the more they ask questions.
100% QW. And you know that, you know, as well as I, that when you push someone to, they move back the other way. Mm-hmm. And so when in that sort of yin knowing, you pull people in and they're like, what is it about this person? And then say, what do you do? And what's the B for? And if you start off by going, oh, you should, then there's a, you know, you're forcing it. But when you know deep in your bones, the right people come in and they ask a question. And we started off with one here, one shop, and then it's now, you know, it's compounding. It's starting to compound fast now. And people, the Madeirans are starting to talk. And so it's a bottom-up approach without forcing.
It's a recurring theme on our show, Rob, that we keep talking about drawing people into the movement through an emotional appeal rather than an intellectual sort of yelling at them and telling them that they're fiat slaves and their money is debasing and how terrible the world is, right? Try to make those intellectual level arguments about Austrian economics. Rather, you create a compelling cultural narrative, right? It could be something like schooling. It could be amazing restaurants. It could be stories, books, plays, whatever it is, right? With Bitcoin as a theme or as a prominent feature there. And then people get curious, right? And they say, why are these people having so much fun? I want to know what's happening, right? And they get drawn into it. This is how we build true Bitcoin adoption, in my mind.
And if you can separate, so like I might be crazy, but I don't feel like you need to own Bitcoin to necessarily be a Bitcoiner. I think you discover that you're a Bitcoiner. And obviously the natural thing from there is to use it as currency. But it's something where it's a very freeing thing. And I think it's a natural state for us to be in. So discovering Bitcoin is actually discovering yourself.
You're dropping bombs there. Yeah. Awesome. I don't, QW, I don't know if you went to Bitcoin Atlantis. Avi, you were there and we got to hang out. Just the vibe, it was absolutely extraordinary. And that type of energy doesn't stay in that stadium. Like it's, and you're, you know, that light that we give off, there is a light. The more you work on yourself, the more, you know, there's a light that emanates from our organs, the mitochondrial system. They're starting to understand this in mitochondrial research. Dr. Jack Cruz, the Bitcoiner, he's brilliant, talks about this light. So the more you work on yourself, you become lighter and you give off a light, you give off an energy. And when you're around someone who's very comfortable in themselves, you can feel it. And so there's a change energetically through kind of osmosis that is happening. And this calmness, the way you two speak, is very calming. And, you know, I don't think we met QW, but when I'm around RV, it's chill mode, it's calm. And that pulls people in, especially when they're distracted and, you know, on the hamster wheel. They're like, what is this thing? And Bitcoin does that for you. Yeah. So
our retention rate's amazing because everyone falls asleep during our shows.
That's the trick.
I've been told, Rob, that people play our podcast at 2x speed, especially when I speak.
Yeah, AI can just speed you up, Avi. Where do we go? So you what kind of trajectory? I mean, how long you been in Madeira?
I've been here just over 2 years now.
And I mean, I feel like Madeira is just this sleeping giant. I mean, we had Andre on a few shows ago, and obviously Free Madeira, all the movement that they're doing there is just, it's beautiful. And it seems like it's become a Noster nucleus as well. It seems like that the movement in general, the Free Madeira, Bitcoin, Noster, the Sovereign Engineering cohort, all those things are starting to happen, Madeira. And then you have your unschooling solution too.
Yeah.
It just feels like there's something special happening in Madeira. And I mean, maybe talk about 2 years ago, today, and maybe the trajectory forward.
Yeah. So kudos to Andre's a legend. I kind of joked one time that there's this, I think it's Zaku, the guy who came on the ship and found this island called Madeira, which was just full of trees, hence Madeira. And there's a statue of him. I say one day there'll be a statue of you, Andre. And he kind of laughed it off. But I do, the guy's he's the catalyst. He's that right side of the hamster wheel energy to achieve. And he's achieved so much. Such a lovely guy. Fortunate to know him. When I first met him, we came here for a few months and we sat for a coffee. There was no Bitcoin accepting businesses except his own. And we started to talk and I said, you know, we're thinking of doing this. He's like, Rob, come to the island, set up a place to be here. This is what we need. Come to the island. And he kind of sold me there and then on Madeira. And it started small. There was a couple of other Bitcoiners here. And then it's through, you know, everyone doing a little bit every day to move things forward. And then we pulled in, you know, the Sovereign Engineering. When that idea came up, it was like, wow, that's so awesome. Then you got Gigi, Pablo, Martin from the cohort. And then it starts pulling in. You walk down the street and you bump into, you know, Gigi or some, you know, you can tell the Noster guys, you're kind of these shadowy coder types come walking around the town because it's a small place. So I think Andre at the moment's traveling, explaining the idea from Free Madeira. Because it's part of Europe, Europe's not going to suddenly go, yeah, Madeira, you go do Bitcoin standard. But so, you know, that it's still a part of Europe. However, if we build something and we keep moving forward, we don't know what is possible. That's why, you know, whenever I've done sport or I'm working with elite athletes, they keep going. And, you know, the story of the two mice running, you know, one drowns, one gives up, and one keeps going and turns the milk into cream and walks out. I've always said that Madeira, you know, people are very quick to naysay and say that nothing will ever happen. My experience, if you put energy into it and keep moving forward, miracles happen. So we just keep doing that, putting energy into making Madeira putting it on the map. My wife is absolutely awesome. You check out her stuff at A Place to Be. She's brilliant. She's green pilling everyone. She's also a wonderful mother, a wonderful person. She's done the hard work on herself. And so that comes across in the way she treats children seriously. I think it's, you know, we're all hurt. We're all traumatized to some degree with the conditioning from humans from, you know, from thousands of years ago. And so the revolution will come via Bitcoin. And will come by individuals doing the work and by allowing our children not to be conditioned. And so for me, the green pilling is extremely close to myself, for my children. And I think all Bitcoiners want the best for their children. You know, they deeply value their children. And that's why they're looking to not put them into a system that devalues them, even though they say it values them. You can't.
Well, I'm definitely a member of the Sylvia fan club here, Rob. I will echo everything you said. Great person. What else are you working on these days? So there's you do your coaching. There's A Place to Be. You give talks and whatnot. What else is on your plate?
I've got the book. It hasn't been like some people write, but like when I talk to Knut about writing a book, he's like, yeah, I'm just going to, you know, hole up and write it in a month. And I'm like, fuck, you know, my conditioning from school where I, you know, it gets triggered when I'm writing, like, oh, this isn't good enough. It's wrong. You know, I'm unable to write well. So I watch my behavior and writing the book. It's nearly done. It's, what I would like is to have a publishing deal in non-Bitcoin, because I want to be able to reach the audience that needs to hear about Bitcoin. So when I give my talks, I'll wear a Bitcoin t-shirt. When I'm giving a talk on mental health or understanding the mind, people then sort of maybe I throw in a joke about Bitcoin, because it needs, you know, that's kind of the orange pilling bit. I love jiu-jitsu, you know, I look after my health. And I lift rocks on the beach and I do jiu-jitsu to challenge myself. I'm 52. I want to be doing jiu-jitsu when I'm 80s, in my 80s. So and it's a full-time job. You know, I work and then I look after my kids, because I don't outsource that. It's not easy, but I wouldn't have it any other way. You know, when I was single, I don't know what I did with my day. You know, it was crazy. Like, I was just caught up in myself. Now, you know, like everyone, I don't study Bitcoin so much. I study myself and my behaviors so I can free myself, so I can help others. And then I can be a better father, better husband. And then I help my wife. Any challenges she has with A Place to Be, we go to the whiteboard and we work on it, because it's always an internal job. So when I'm working with a business person, you know, it's always an internal job. Today I went for a walk with a Bitcoiner, a 6-kilometer walk by the sea. And I like eating and, yeah, but, you know, like everyone else, I'm just living and enjoying.
Lifting rocks on the beach, Rob, the beach is rocks.
I know. Yeah, so there's plenty. So if anyone ever wants to come and lift rocks with me, there are plenty of rocks. I have my two that got moved the other day for the first time in 2 years. I think it must have been a storm. Unless someone's playing around with my rocks, there's plenty of rocks, so they shouldn't be touching them. I lift rocks because, you know, I could be in a gym, but I like being, I like to ground. I believe in grounding, connecting to the earth and the, you know, getting the electrons inside of me. I do that barefoot, so you don't want to drop the rock on your toes, the big rock. I'm also in the sun and the, you know, by the sea. It's just an incredibly beautiful place. And so I try and get out as much as I can with the kids.
I like how the rocks are over, like, let's say, 1 million years old, and they just became Rob's in the past 2 years.
And then this seagull sat on them. I was like, you know, all of the. Oh, I had to lift. And then it rained. They've it's gone. But I had like loads of shit on one of my rocks that threw me a little.
Anything else, Javi? And I would, what, so you mentioned a place to be in Sylvia. What, where can they go to find that? Do you just Google search or?
It's a website, placetobe.me. Again, it's the emphasis on a child learning to be comfortable in his own skin, boundaries, being his own authority, which is the opposite. If, you know, the opposite is going onto the hamster wheel, which I've spent my life getting off. So that's a place to be. Me, you can go there. She's on podcast. There's a video by Max DeMarco on a place to be. It's about unschooling, or is the schooling system broken, by Max.
I'll tag that one for sure.
Yeah, awesome video, very interesting. Did an awesome job with for us, and so he's a very close friend now. With my work, it's robbrinder.com. If anyone's interested in working with me, that's what I love doing. I have a course. I have an online course called Meditation OS. OS standing for Operating System and Observation of Self, where I teach you how to do it. And I do webinars in that every week for my students. And hopefully my book will be out after Christmas, and maybe with a big publisher, but it depends if they think it's any good.
Have you thought of a name for it?
I haven't. I've heard from my editor that, don't worry, it will come at the end, but it's going to be, it's a great question.
It would be kind of funny to name it before. Like when I used to make songs, I'd have to name it after. It's something where it comes from the internal, maybe feel part of it.
Yeah. It's trying to, like, what am I trying to do? Just call it something that I want or
hook people, right?
Because
then it kind of pigeonholes your mentality when you're writing it.
Yes. Yes. No, no, no. You're right. So I don't know. I'm talking about the operating system, like the body is like you're an activity monitor, say on Mac. You go in and you can look at what's running and close it. It's like you can clear your cache. So the book is about the internal technology is equal to the external, as above, as below, as within, as without. Everything, there's a reflection. So we have this internal technology. And there's these operating systems that run like hamster wheels. So I don't know if to call it something around hamster wheel or operating system. I'm not quite sure.
Well, can't wait for it to come out, Rob.
Yeah, I can't wait to finish it.
Avi, I think he just reminded you to feed your hamster as well. Have you walked him today, your hamster, Avi?
Yes, I've observed.
You got one of those docile ones.
I've observed all five of my hamsters, I think.
That just don't make it the Richard Gere. Perfect way to finish.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else, Avi?
No, Rob. Appreciate you taking the time. Conversations with you are always enlightening and entertaining.
I could have gone along a lot longer, but we do have a cap on our show, and our listeners are asleep anyways at this point, so it's just a few more sat stream via fountain, Avi. Well, thank you very much, Rob. It was a pleasure, honestly. Just a very, very interesting conversation. I keep getting more and more inspired to go to Madeira and take my wife and my son, take a look at everything going on there. I think that's going to be our 2025 trip, whether, it's there's a having party there or not. I don't care. I think it's a lifestyle that I want to look into. So
QW, reach out when you come here. We'll come over. We'll have pizza or whatever. And we usually, when Bitcoin has come over, we have them over and we have the kids play, and there's a park next door and a swimming pool. So you come and hang out. And Avi, whenever I get to hang out with you, it's awesome. So just Thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. And that it's on Nosta, my first time doing something like this. How awesome. It's been super. I can see the comments on the side. Someone was asking a question. I don't know where that's gone.
I got a notification that there's a question, but I don't know where it is. It might have been Zap.stream or something. Or maybe no stir. So this actually gets pushed out to multiple. So if we're on Oster Nest right now, it actually streams to No Stir, the client. It streams to Amethyst, the client, and also streams to Zap.stream. So what we see in this room isn't necessarily the people that are listening live.
Okay. Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Show decentralized.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. I'm going to put all those in the show notes. Mine, Decentralized, the book, Place to Be. Shout out Sylvia, Rob Brinded. And then the unschooling Max DeMarco documentary that I found interesting. Anyone listening, please support Value for Value. Listen on the Nostr client fountain. Boost us, post, comment, whatever it may be. Support the movement, Value for Value, Freedom Tech. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Thank you.